Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So I was homeless. I didn't want to be a burden. I think a lot of homeless people, that must happen to them. You know, you get a bit too proud and you don't want to be a burden on it. So when I come back, people are like, oh, you can stay with me, stay on my sofa. I'm thinking, yeah, I don't want to stay on their sofa, you know.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Balancing Acts. In this conversation, I talk to comedian, writer and director Ashley Gorman. Hello, I'm Steve Whiteley and welcome to Balancing Acts, a series of conversations with an array of creatives. We talk about their journey, the struggles they faced whilst progressing their career, strategies they use to unlock their creativity, how they balance their career with their personal lives, what impact this has had on their mental health, and lots more. As a comedian, Ashley has won the London Comedy Store's Brutal King Gong competition. He's gigged in comedy clubs up and down the country, was host of the Gourmania podcast, and he also launched the infamous South Kensington Comedy Club. And as a writer and director, he created his proof of concept show, Diamante, which we talk about in this conversation. As I'm sure you can gauge from the teaser, this was quite inspiring to hear Ashley's story, how he went from being homeless to following his dreams to become a comedian and writer and director and making solid progress. There's a moment early on where we discover that we were both born in the same hospital and grew up in pretty much the same area. So we spent a good deal of time covering ground in terms of swapping names, who's doing what now, is such and such in prison, and so forth and so forth. So to protect the privacy of the people that we talk about from our ends, shall we say, I've edited a lot of that bit out. Also, you probably won't find it interesting, but it was very enjoyable to chat to Ashley about various and notorious faces from back in the day and what they're currently up to. Also, I should give a heads up /warning. At some point in this conversation, Ashley describes his former life as a driver for escorts, which is what inspired his proof of concept film, Diamante. And as he's describing his role and some of the scenarios that occurred during this time, he does use some strong and explicit sexual language, which I've decided not to edit out because it very much plays a part in him explaining his motivations for making the film. And to be honest, we are all familiar with bodily parts and we know what their names are and we're adults. So I've given the warning. If that sounds like it offends you, then just be aware that it's going to come up around, I think, the midway mark. Oh, and just to let you know, I now have a blog. It's very exciting, isn't it? I've heard about these blog things. Apparently it's the future. It's the future of writing, so forth. So I decided I was going to jump on board early doors. My blog consists of random stories and events that happen in my life and certain musings mulling around in my mind. So if you want to gain a further insight into my own madness, then feel free to jump onto my website, stevewhiteley.co. That's W-H-I-T-E-L-E-Y. And there you will find a blog section you can click on. It will take you through to the different articles. I mean, I've written three so far. But it's enough to get stuck into. And I very much welcome your feedback. If you are enjoying them or not, then do let me know. And as always, if you enjoy this episode and you haven't done already, please do subscribe to the podcast And if you're really enjoying it, a rate and reviewing on Apple would be muchas appreciated. And now, without further ado, over to Ashley. Perfect. So we were just saying that last time we saw each other was about at least two years ago at your comedy club, South Kensington Comedy Club, which I always enjoyed playing. I've always liked the vibe there. It's just got a bit of like an old school comedy club feel to it, you know?
Yeah, it's nice. It's good for working stuff out in there, you know? It's a great room to work stuff out. I don't know if when you'd done it, I can't remember when it was. I was there. I remember being there. You were great. I can't remember when it was, but there was like a time where, because we started doing the comedy down there in 2017. But for the first 3 years, it wasn't really busy. I used to like, I mean, I didn't really know what I was doing. So we were just going downstairs and saying to people in the pub, do you want to come up?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was the room downstairs and then it moved to the room upstairs.
Oh, right. After a while, before the pandemic, it had taken off.
I remember.
We had people just coming back. It was still an open mic, but it was good to like work stuff out. It was really, really busy. It's just getting back to that now, but I've taken a break because I'm in uni at the moment.
So you're at uni at the moment and you're studying what, acting, TV and film?
Just film. Well, it's actually film and media I'm doing.
Okay. Because you did a post-grad diploma, right? In acting, TV and film.
So it's a BA in film and media. Yeah.
Okay, great. And are you finding that useful with applying your trade in the entertainment industry?
To be honest with you, like I keep saying to people, I did it for the screenwriting module only, right? And that's why, I mean, I wanted to just do screenwriting.
Okay.
That's why I did it. But in hindsight, I've read a lot of books, watched every YouTube tutorial, and actually been writing myself. So I kind of feel now I could have swerved uni and just learned myself. But
right, DIY.
Yeah, I wouldn't advise anyone to go to uni to do it. But at the same time, being there, kind of, you know, like you got, like for the screenwriting module, like I had deadlines. So
Useful. So useful.
Yeah. 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 That's good. Because if you don't have a deadline, like it's a lot of procrastination. And, you know, like I know that I have to have a first draft in by this date. And so that's a good thing. It gives you a kick up the ass that way. But I do feel that there was a few books I could have just read, and YouTube's brilliant, you know? So
yeah.
I could have done.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? The amount of resources, like no film school, and it's endless. Everything is available. If you want to learn, it's all there.
Yeah, you can actually learn anything on YouTube now, can't you? Like, they've got everything.
Anything. What's the most random thing that you've ever tried to learn?
I've done so many stupid things. I can't think that, but I could. You know what? I actually use it on YouTube. I've done the guitar, the piano thing.
Yeah.
I've done boxing, not just on YouTube, but I mean, I've studied it on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
They're the first things that come to the top of my head. I can't think of the rest of them.
I just go in there for like just everyday stupid shit, like how to take a film out of a camera. I just got one of those like vintage cameras.
It's got everything, and there's everything on there. You name it, it's on there. Even like you said, the most stupidest thing will be on there. You know, and like you can literally end up going down a rabbit hole. Like you said, you end up watching yesterday. I don't know how it happened, but I ended up going from Salma Hayek eating hot wings to Joe Rogan to something like it. Just you know, they just keep, it's just the algorithm. They just do it to keep you on there, don't they?
See, that's the thing, right? So you can go onto YouTube to learn how to write, but the main blocks progressing in writing anything is procrastination. And so you're on this thing to learn, and YouTube is like the best source for procrastination. So you watch a video and you're like, oh yeah, that's really interesting. Oh look, what's that video on Mike Tyson? Yeah. I'm going to watch him train for
it. Yeah, I do that a lot as well. IFL TV, you know, like IFL TV.
What's IFL TV? What's that?
It's the one where it's for boxing, and they've got, you know, they've always got exclusive access to like Eddie Hearn. You know, they've just done the exclusive of Anthony Joshua. I'm a mad boxing fan.
Yeah, same. So I haven't seen that channel though.
It's Coogan Cassian, his name is the guy. I end up watching that for ages because they get like, you know, they get great interviews with everyone. It'd be like, just say like now that he obviously knows the people, so he just gets them online, or he actually goes around to their houses and he'll get them on his camera and get them chatting, and it'll be uploaded a couple of hours later, and that's what the guy does for a living. He's done well out of it.
Nice, nice. Right. So you're from Northwest London, aren't you?
Yeah.
Whereabouts? Yeah. Where did you grow up?
I was born in Edgware.
Same.
Or Edgware General.
Edgware General.
I was born in Edgware General. And I brought up around Burntoak.
Okay.
Proper.
I used to get my kebabs from Burnt Oak on a Friday night.
Yeah, I think everyone. So did I. Whereabouts? Do you remember what one?
I can't remember. I was always smashed, to be honest. I was like, I don't know, 17, 18. I can't remember where it was. But I remember they were so good.
Whereabouts did you live then?
So I was in Edgware. And I was Edgware. And I'm sure, what are local pubs? The Edge of Town. Do you know the Edge of Town?
Oh, yeah, I used to know the owner back in the day.
Did you? That was rowdy, that pub.
Yeah, yeah, I knew it then. When you used to be able to go in there, and then at about midnight, it would shut. The ashtrays would come out, would be there till 6 a.m. They used to have down the road, they used to have a place called Cafe Edge.
I remember Cafe Edge, yeah. They used to do garage nights there.
Yeah, yeah. I worked there when I was 15.
What, a Cafe Edge?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, we must have crossed paths. I was a kitchen porter though in it's called Cafe Edge of Town, Cafe Edge.
Edge of Town and Cafe Edge. What about do you remember a place called the Juice Bar?
Juice Bar, yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
That's a lot of us used to hang out there and play snooker.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Had a dodgy owner.
Oh yeah, so did the Cafe Edge and stuff like that.
I remember one time, because I used to go there when I was so young. We'd always go there, obviously underage. And I remember one time I went, it was one of my first times there. And I went to the toilet and I was like, we're getting ready for a night out. You know, I just look at myself in the mirror. And this guy comes in and he's washing his hands. And he turns around to me and he goes, "You look really good, mate." And I was like, oh, thanks, mate. He goes, "Nah, I was joking." That set the tone for that place. Yeah.
That was one thing I'll say about Edgware and Burnt Oak. It was full of like some proper dodgy and funny characters.
So this is the bit where Ash and I go on to talk in detail about some of the people we grew up with. And so for the sake of both the listener and, as I said earlier, to protect the privacy of the dodgy geezers mentioned, I decided to edit this bit out, mostly for fear of retribution.
I've taken a break from comedy because what I want to do is the writing and directing.
Okay.
So I've taken a break from it. But I mean, comedy was going all right. Like I've won the Gong. I just got my first open spot at the Comedy Store. I've just got in to do Top of Your Secret, you know, like when I say regularly, every other month. I run a monthly show, the Gong show at Top Secret, which helps new acts get on there.
Yeah.
So I was doing that and like, you know, the open mic's going well, but my passion, mate, is like writing. I really like writing. And I'm, do you know what I'm doing at the moment? I was thinking this because, you know, with the writing fingers as well, it's like, it's not even so much the script writing that takes as long. I mean, obviously, like honing it, making it better does. But for me, I take a long time to outline. I spend a lot of time on outlining.
That's good, though. You want to spend time. Yeah. Otherwise,
I never used to. And then you end up, when you don't outline, you just end up with loads of fucking scripts that you never finish. Do you know what I mean? I've got loads of...
They go nowhere.
You get to like the midpoint or you might not even get as far as the midpoint. You just get like to nowhere. And then you're just stumped because you've had this idea. You've got an idea for a couple of scenes. You've got characters talking and then it's not going anywhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you read The Craft of Character?
Mark's book.
That? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great book.
Yeah. Yeah. That book. Do you know what I think?
Mark after uni, who's been a previous guest. For anyone listening, wondering who Mark is.
Yeah, yeah, he's great. He's lovely. I talk to him now because he's the one that recommended your podcast to me. And by the way, you know when people say, "Oh yeah, I love your podcast," but they're probably chatting shit because they're just saying that. They ain't really they ain't really listened to it. I listened to this, but I didn't say to Mark, "Oh, get me on it," because I was thinking, I ain't got really much to talk about. But I suppose turns out I have got stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is a great podcast. It's good.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, man.
It is a good podcast. But what I was going to say, with The Craft of Character, I now think, and I say this to everyone, they go, "Oh, I'm going to write a script. What would you write?" I say, right, get Sid Field's Definitive Guide to Screenwriting, yeah? That is a book that will teach you the mechanics of a screenplay, yeah, for like films and that, all right? and then get the craft of character. I'll teach you about character. And now there's one I'm reading now that, because I got notes back from a production company and they recommended I read this book. And I think, oh, another book, because I've read like loads. But you've probably read it. Have you had the Eight Characters Comedy?
No.
Oh, this, yeah, them three books. And then,
what did you say? It's called Eight Characters of Comedy.
Yeah. Oh, listen, you've got to read this book. It's okay. So good. So really? Good. You know what? I couldn't wait for it to come by Amazon one day. I was so impatient. I've got it yesterday, only yesterday, mate. And I am, I've got it on this Kindle here. I've nearly finished it. You know, I've just been binging on it. The Eight Characters of Comedy. Where is it? Is it by Scott? And you're an actor as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I've taken a bit of a break. Well, similar to you, really. I've taken a bit of a break from the performing things for, since the pandemic. I've been dipping in and out of it, really.
Well, this is also about sitcom acting, but it's really interesting because, like, in this book, he's talking about, like, and it made me think about my stand-up and some of the things that work and didn't work. He's talking about rhythm of the way they say things in sitcoms.
Okay.
And I didn't realise that was actually happening in the sitcom. Like, I never noticed it. And then now reading this book, I'm like, fucking hell yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, like, there's a joke I do about on stage. And it's not, I said to my mate, it's not a joke, but they always laugh. It's like, I say, I got arrested for the first time. And you never guess got arrested for. And I just say drunk cycling twice. But it's the rhythm and the way that I say it is what's induced is a massive laugh. And then I point, and say, this guy's looking at me because he thinks I ain't laughing because obviously I'm fat. And then they laugh at that. And I go, he's looking at me like he didn't know drunk cycling was a crime.
Yeah.
And I say, it's not, but it is if you're carrying drugs. And then they laugh at that. But it's the rhythm. And that was something I was doing naturally and I didn't realise I was doing it. And my point is that with this book, I'm going to try and implement that now into a sitcom that I'm going to write. I'm going to try and use the same kind of rhythm because I was like, yeah, that really fucking works. And it's not just about sitcom acting, it's the writing, and it, you know, it breaks down the different art types and you know, stuff like that. I mean, I've read, mate, I mean, if you name a book, I've probably read it. There's definitely not a YouTube tutorial I haven't seen.
You know, read the Bible.
The Bible, yeah,
classic.
Well, I put them all in there. I've got I've got most of them, apart from if they've, you know, the guys that have two books, I haven't gone and bought their second book, you know, and stuff like that. Some people have got
they're just taking their piss, aren't they? Just trying.
Yeah, they are. They're just milking it now, and then it gets boring.
More things to know about script writing that I didn't do in the previous one. Well, why didn't you tell me in the first one?
Yeah. That's why I like. And the other thing is as well, I find with Mark's book, The Craft of Character, and with the Eight Characters of Comedy, it's not too complicated. Have you read Into the Woods?
I was going to mention that one. Yeah, John York.
Yeah, like for me, that's quite heavy.
I'm doing his course in January. It's on drama because I just thought, why not?
Oh, is that online or in person?
It's online.
Oh, that's still great though. Yeah. I did the what's the guy that wrote? God, mine's come back. Line of Duty.
Jed Mercurio. Did you do the BBC Maestro course?
Yeah, have you done that?
No, is it good?
Yeah, that's good. That's really good.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So you created your proof of concept, Diamante. Was that the first time you had decided to go out and create your own, you know, I guess it's like it falls between a short film and a pilot episode, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's what you said, it's a proof of concept to then go and pitch to production companies and so forth. How did you arrive at that decision to make it?
What was I doing? I did Bennett Aaron's sitcom writing course, you know?
No.
I did a sitcom writing course and that was on, because I remember I was checking my emails the other day to see when I first wrote anything about Diamante. And I wrote a sitcom, which is nothing like that proof of concept. It's completely different, you know what I mean? Completely different story. The only thing is the same is that the three main characters have got the same name, but it's a completely different story because obviously it was a sitcom and this is a drama. I wrote that on November the 3rd last year, and then like that was, I think it's only a week long. Was we still in lockdown then? I think we might have still been in lockdown. It was a week, or I can't remember, it's a week long writing course. And then I just thought, this isn't really a sitcom, You know, this isn't really a sitcom. And I'm a big fan of what I mainly watch is a lot of drama, like, or dramedy. I like comedy drama. So I got an assignment. Remember, I said I was in uni. I got an assignment for uni, and it was to write a 30-minute short film. And then I thought, if I'm going to write a 30-minute short film, because I thought what you do in uni is that you write it and make it, but it doesn't go like that. It's different modules for different things. So I thought, right, if I'm going to write this 30-minute short film, I'm going to write it as a TV pilot, but then also I'm going to make it in the summer. That was always my plan. So then what did I do? That was in November, December, I had the first draft. And do you ever do this? You just write the first draft and then you just leave it.
All the time.
Yeah, I just left it. And then I was listening to another podcast called The One Where, and it had on a screenwriter called Shane Allen. You should listen to that episode, it's quite good. And he was talking about his journey to screenwriting. And I thought, wow, he's got like a similar story to us, like kind of similar kind of background and that. You know, like, he worked from Edgeware, but, you know, he sounds like he knows the crack. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. It always feels good, doesn't it? When you hear someone like that and you're just like, maybe it's doable.
Yeah, he just had his show coming out on BBC America called The Watch. It was adaptive. It was a superhero thing, adapted. Okay. He'd been working with Frank Spotnick, you know, from X-Files, Man in the High Castle, and stuff like that. And after I reached out to him, spoke to him, and he was really sad. And he just said to me, just write. And then I thought, he's right. Just fucking stop talking about it. Just write. And then I just went at it, mate. I rewrote Don Monte. I know the first 17, 18 pages. I reckon I've done the first 17, 18 pages about 50 times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the thing is, even now, when I look back at it, it makes me cringe. Because even now when I'm watching it, I can tell that I was like, I still hadn't learned enough then. And it was it's just so on the nose. Like, I'm just watching it like, oh God. But I had a screening on Saturday, right? Mm. And say, like, they're watching it, right? 50 people are watching the screen. I faced my chair and I'm watching them. And I'm watching the people. Because I want to see. But all the jokes landed, the bits that were supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
So I was happy. Because it's like, it was like, you know, it's like when you write a new bit of stand-up and the audience laugh, it makes you happy. So they was all laughing. And like, and they really enjoyed. You could tell they genuinely really enjoyed it. I don't think they was chatting shit on the way out because I didn't know some of these people. Some of the people, you know, they might just be saying it, but the people I didn't know didn't have to say anything, and they really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So it went well. But I can see, just, you know, now I've grown as a writer. Like I said, it's 12 months ago I started that. Even though I rewrote it a lot, I've grown a lot now as a writer, and there's so many things I'd do different. But at the same time, I think what it's got me. Whereas before, producers wouldn't read any of my work or script. Now I've messaged them, and I think you said it to me, and I think Mark said it as well. You said, like, it puts you ahead, like, 95% of people that haven't made stuff, because it kind of makes you look a bit more serious, I think.
Definitely.
And they're like, okay, yeah, we will have a look here. Whereas before, they're like, no, we don't accept unsolicited material.
Right.
Whereas a few people are now. So I've made good connections, and I've had 90% good feedback. I actually had some yesterday that wasn't good feedback, but 90% of feedback is good.
How did you deal with the negative feedback? I watched it. I thought it was great. I was really impressed. It's like, it's high production value.
And do you know what it
and
is?
Also I like the and I like that you gave the characters space, you know, because I think, like, there can be a tendency sometimes you start off to try and pack it with action. You know, I'm saying that from first-hand experience, because that's what I would do. You know, and I started off, and perhaps I still have a tendency to do that sometimes. But the beginning, it was sort of like there was a lot of it was, but there was space there. You gave space to really sort of introduce the characters.
Yeah, what the problem it was yesterday, and this is, I don't want to say nothing bad about the person, but like if you're not brought up in that certain kind of life around them certain kind of people, because she's got to remember this. Oh, by the way, Diamante, did I tell you that that's a true story? Yeah.
Okay, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Diamante's a true story, right?
You should put that at the beginning. You know that. You should put that at the beginning.
Yeah, this
based
is
based on a true story.
Yeah, I should do, shouldn't I? Yeah, I will do that.
Yeah, because if I knew that at the beginning, I'd be like, oh, okay, wow.
Yeah. It's based on a true story. There was no 22-inch double-ended dildo. You know what I mean? Like, I put that in for comedic effect. That's just something I just put in. But like, that was a true story. I was working as a driver for an escort agency in the summer of 2017 from, what was it, from, say, May to, like, September.
How did you get that gig?
My friend was an escort, and she said to me, and I was like, just going through divorce, just started open mic, so I wasn't making any money. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I was just struggling. I was a driving instructor, but after I went through this divorce and got into comedy, I was getting into the car next to people and I was just thinking, fuck off. I don't want to be here anymore. So I just like got into that. And I hired a Mercedes C-Class and I was working for Diamond Escorts, which is where the Diamante company. I was working for Diamond.
Right.
And basically what happened was the lady said to me, she went, look, we've never had no trouble in 10 years. Everything will be fine. Don't worry. Blah, blah's vouched for you. Said you're a nice guy and all that. You know what I mean? You know, these are the rules. So the girl, like when you go in, the girl goes in, she says she's all right. Then you just wait outside and then she'll call you before she comes out. When she comes out, she gives you the money. Say it's £130. She takes £50. We take £60. You take £20 of the first hour. If she has any add-ons, any additional hours, you get £10 for every additional hour. You know what I mean? So it's like £10 an hour, really.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, fine. I'll do it, see how it goes. Anyway, so I've met this girl, Abby, yeah? I'm still in contact with Abby as well. That's not her real name, but that's her working name.
Yeah.
And I told her, and I sent her this thing. And I met this girl, Abby, this Irish girl. And how it all actually works is they meet off a junction of the M25 in a car park. It's exactly like, that's the other thing as well about this woman, sorry. She thinks that there was a gender issue. You know, like there's a bit in the car where he drives past and all the girls are there and stuff, right? She didn't like that, but I'm like, but that's how it is.
That's the reality of the situation.
That's a reality. That's my story. That's what happened. Yeah. So you go into this car park, this Sainsbury's car park it is. That was the Hollywood Bowl we filmed in. But it's a Sainsbury's car park. When you go in, it's just loads of women and loads of drivers, right? And they just sit there until they get a job. And when they get a client, they drive off. So I've met this girl, Abby, anyway, pick up from Greenford. We've gone to this junction, 22 at the M25 or something.
Was this like round your ends where you grew up?
No, this was like London Coney I had to go. So off the M25. Right. So okay. I was at it was that Sainsbury's there I was. So I went there and I picked her up. We're chatting. There was no like, the bit that isn't true, there was no attraction. I didn't like in there. I kind of make it look like there's a will they won't they.
Yeah.
But it was nothing like that. I was not interested, and never was she. But we was actually both like some of my family from Dublin, and she was from Dublin, so we got along. And I've lived in Dublin, so we were chatting, you know, like talking about stuff like that. And then the job come in. Perfect.
Hello, sorry to interrupt in the middle of this insightful conversation, which I'm enjoying, I'm sure, just as much as you are. But I need to give you guys a little reminder. If you like this conversation, this episode, if you like balancing acts in general, then please do subscribe to us, rate and review us, because it makes the world of difference. And the more reviews we get, the more rates we get, the more people can discover the podcast and we can make it go viral, whatever that means. Okay, back to the chat.
We go to this job and I'm starving. I'm not eating, right? And I'm thinking, she said she's all right. I thought she's going to be an hour. So I spun the car around. As I've gone up the road to get, I've gone to get a pizza because I saw a Domino's on the way. She called me back. She's like, Ash, I need you to come and get me right now. I was like, oh, fuck. Like, she thought I was outside. So I said, I'll be 1 minute. Spun this. This was actually in the script, but I didn't have the budget to make the drive look like, you know, because it would have looked more like something the Fast and Furious, but I didn't have the budget for it. So I spun this car around, I'm weaving in and out of these cars, I've run through, banged on the door, I've opened the letterbox and I see the man, he's holding the girl by the neck. I said, mate, if you don't open the door, I'm going to fucking kick it down, mate. He went to me, she's shit, she won't do anal. And then it's like clear as day, there's all people, it's like a summer's evening, 7 o'clock, all people. And then I shouted back to the letterbox, come on, mate. You know anal's an extra £100? Everyone's looking at me. That wasn't the original script. That was in the original script, but we took it out. I can't remember what reason I took it out. But
so did you end up kicking the door down?
Yeah, so you can take it. Was exactly like that. So you didn't kick it. I kicked the door down. I've gone in, I've run up, and when I've opened the door, I'm fat, but this guy was like muscly, right? Fuck's sake. So I've run up and I've just grabbed him like this from the top. We fell from the top of the stairs to the bottom. She's there. She should have just let go. You know what it was? It was all because Abby wouldn't let go of the bloody money. She was like, he was like, I want my money back if you're not doing anal. And she was like, it's anal's an extra, and plus I don't do extras. So she's got the money. And then me and him at the bottom, and then to the left, this is what I'm saying, it wasn't a double anal. To the left of me was a screwdriver. So I've just reached and I've grabbed this screwdriver. And as I'm coming down, something grabbed me. It was police. The police grabbed me, pulled me away, pulled him away. But they didn't nick me. They or Abby. They nicked the guy for imprisonment and kidnap. They said, like, they basically made that like, I was a hero. And they fucking like they treated me like a proper hero. They was like, oh, come down to Hitchin Station. You've done really well. How do you know her and all that? I said, well, I was on Gumtree and I saw someone looking for security drivers, which is a lie. And I said, so I just applied for the job and I was just looking after her. I don't even know her. So it was a bit like Goodfellas, you know, when he don't rat on the fucking the family. So then after this, Donna, her name really was Donna. She calls me up. She says, oh, I heard you can handle yourself. And she's like, next time, I want you to look after two girls. So the next night, there's me all driving around. Me and two girls. And then I had three girls. And then it was just always a drama. And it was always about anal. Because it basically it's £130 for a blowjob and missionary, with a condom. Anything else is an extra. And then they start kicking off when it don't include anal. And they don't want to pay the extra £100 for the anal.
Why don't they ask up front? This industry, it needs to be completely revamped. They need to have paperwork. There should be contracts in place. They need to have counter signatures. That's where they're going wrong.
It was mad, man. And like, I had it with a guy at the Dorchester. We didn't start fighting, but we was in each other's faces. He's going, she won't. I can't do the Scottish accent, but he was screaming, she won't do anal in a Scottish accent in the Dorchester in front of the, you know, like the people that work there. I don't know what they called them. Was it the bellboys or whatever? It was mental. And I did that for a while. And the thing is, when you do this job, I didn't really feel, it wasn't, the women wanted to be there and I really admired them because they are fucking hustlers. Like, they know exactly how to get the most amount of money out of someone that will tell you that they've only got enough money for an hour. Like, if they've got any more money to get, these girls will fucking get the money out of you. Like, and they were just, I admired their hustle and stuff, but like, it was just, I didn't like doing I didn't like the drama and kicking off. And I didn't like I'd pick them up at say 7 and then I'd be working till 7 or 8. I didn't like that. It was just too much.
Right.
And then, yeah, it's too much. So that's what why
you know what I'm thinking? I'm like, your hustle, your background, you know, in your former career as a distributor of good times, shall we say. You've taken those experiences and you've applied that hustler mentality to your comedy career, from running and launching your own night at South Kensington Comedy Club to now creating your own proof of concept. I think that sort of thing sets people apart, you know, the ones that have got that industry to just like go out and create their own opportunities. Yeah, because you know, it's not like you can't just sit there with a begging plate waiting for it to happen, because you know that it won't.
I can't. And I get that. I get anxiety if I'm sitting around waiting for like things to happen. But I want to quickly say what I was saying about that woman saying about the gender issues. And her problem was, I went off on a tangent about it being a true story, but her
good story.
Yeah. Her problem was, is that she didn't like it, that it seemed like, and I had this on a note from someone else, like Mark or someone, because he gave me that, or someone else had already given me the note. So I'd already fucking changed the script. Because originally he was a bit, it kind of happened how it happened in real life. It was close to real life. And then I was like, no, I need to make this woman badass. I'm going to give her a 22-inch double in a dildo. She's going to beat the guy unconscious and she's going to save herself. Yeah. And that way, you know, it's showing, you know, strong, in the like strong women female, that they don't need a man. That's the message I was putting across. And the other message was, the underlying message was, is that everybody can be a hero, no matter what their class is or their job or anything. But it got missed by this person giving these notes. Like, she missed that. Like, I think she felt that I was enforcing that women need, and she said, we need to steer clear of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I think what also is interesting about that whole thing is that sometimes it's really hard to, when you're writing something that's based on your own experiences, it's very hard to sort of like have distance from it and separate yourself from the actual original experience. Because often I've found, and I'm sure you know this and you've done it yourself, when you're sort of telling stories on stage as a stand-up, sometimes you have to, you might invent the truth. You know, you might have to, you change an ending, or there's only a character in there that wasn't in the original story, but you do it for the effect, right? You do it for comic effect. And it's the same, I think, applies to writing. When you're writing something that's autobiographical, you're kind of this part of you that's like emotionally attached to it. Well, that's what happened. So why wouldn't I write that? But sometimes you need to, you know, I think you need to sort of play around with the truth sometimes to make it work.
I did do that with the story, but I just didn't see anything wrong with him. Because the idea of that scene was, and that scene was actually supposed to be epic. Like, they were supposed, you know, I had about 20 extras cancel on me. The girls you will see are all comedians.
The extras will always cancel. If they're not getting paid, extras
are
like, mate, something's come up, mate. Sorry, it's just our work has called me in. You know, it's like, oh, really? Yeah. Like, 10 of you in a row?
Yeah, that's it. It was like so many. Because basically it was supposed to be the point, because now the protagonist has now taken this job. And he's entering this whole new world for the first time. And this is the first, because I'm just trying to remember how I felt when I was going. I drove into that car park and I was just like, how the fuck has this been going on there? Like, I'm driving in and there's all these women just standing by these cars and no one's saying anything and no one's noticed. But I suppose thinking about it, unless you know that they're escorts, you're just thinking, oh, look, there's a bunch of beautiful women. Because they're not trying to solicit sex. They're not trying to sell sex in the car park. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like they get called for the jobs and then they go after houses. So I suppose if you were to drive in and you didn't know, it could just look like a bunch of beautiful women standing with guys by cars.
Was it Tesco's? You know? Was it Tesco's?
He's like, where
was it? Yeah. Sainsbury's. You just imagine like all the sort of local husbands. Oh, I love just going off to Sainsbury's. He went there this morning already. Forgot something. I'll just go. I'll be back in a bit.
Yeah, it'll be mental.
The most glamorous Sainsbury's in London Colony, like the most unlikeliest of places to attract sort of glamorous looking women in a Sainsbury's car park.
Crazy. So yeah, they were in my notes. I mean, I didn't agree with the notes on that one, but because I felt I'd already, like, you know, done well to make it not look like a male saviour. Mm. But then, and then she said about the way that the guy talked to the protagonist talks to the stepdad, and, you know, like, that's just how people would speak from where I'm from. You know, remember, this is supposed to be kind of urban. He's not supposed to be speaking prim and proper. He's supposed to be talking.
But then that's fine. Like, what you make or what you create is going to, everything is subjective. Yeah. And so if it's not right for her, then that's fine. Then you can take on board some of the notes if you want, or if you choose not to, then that's all right as well. You know, it's up to you, isn't it?
That's
I always like to accept notes and graciously, you know, thank you so much.
Yeah. I was like that. Yeah.
Even if internally I'm just like, oh, fuck you. Yeah.
I was like so grateful because I mean, it took like 2 months to give me these notes, and they're a big production company. I didn't want to burn bridges or anything.
Of course.
And it's the same with, that's the first time I've had notes where I was like a bit like, well, I disagree, but I didn't say anything. I was like you said, thank you so much for taking the time. And she was the one that actually recommended that A Characters of Comedy to me.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's great. Okay, so that's your focus now at the moment, is to push ahead as a comedy, I was going to say comedy writer, director, but you're saying sort of more like dramedy. That's the tone that you're kind of moving towards.
Yeah, I say that, but you know what? You know, I was also saying, I did an outline for a sitcom, and I've never wrote the sitcom about PCSO, you know, police community support officers.
Yeah.
I wrote like a little outline about that, but I did it backwards. I've done the scenario, and I haven't done the characters yet. Do you know what I mean? There's four of them, but I haven't done the characters. Like the beats and everything's all there. So I'm going to, after I've read this book, I'm going to do that as well. You know, like, give it a go, because I just want to show that I can, you know?
Yeah. Why not? Ash, there's one question I didn't ask you that I wanted to ask you, which was, I'd heard you talk about it in your stand-up, and that was about your time experiencing homelessness.
Oh, yeah.
What period of your life did that occur, and how did that come about? And how did you get past that?
I'll tell you what happened. That was the other thing I've got to say. How Diamante come around is I was homeless living in the... I was going through this divorce. Came back from Thailand with no money. I was going to work for Red driving school, but it takes a while for this all to go through. So I was homeless. I didn't want to be a burden. I think a lot of homeless people, that must happen to them. You know, you get a bit too proud and you don't want to be a burden on it. So when I come back, people are like, oh, you can stay with me, stay on my sofa. I'm thinking, I don't want to stay on their sofa, you know? So I went to the YMCA, got in the hostel there, and I was in there for a while. But then the time I actually refer to in the stand-up of like being homeless is what happened was I was going out. This is like 2 years after that. I was going out with this Russian girl, and I moved out to Surrey. Stopped doing stand-up because she wanted me to get a proper job. You know what I mean? So I started doing recruitment, and we had an argument. She just kicked me. She owned the place. It was her place. She's a rich girl, and I had no leg to stand on. She just kicked me out. It's literally like she kicked me out, and I didn't have savings. I'd just given her rent. She kicked me out and wouldn't let me stay there. So I was homeless for a couple of weeks until that room where the woman shit on the floor became available. And you know what should have been the clue? Was the clue in that was there was no deposit and it was only £350 a month. That was the clue about the woman that shit on the floor. I should have known that in London, getting something for that price, something was up. Because I know like some people are like, why does he say he was homeless? He could have stayed at my house. But I don't want to stay at your house. I mean, some people, you've got family or you've got a girlfriend, or it's just a burden. I felt like a burden on people. So right. I just chose to stay, you know, on my own there. That's basically why I was homeless and that, yeah.
So it's quite an inspiring story, you know, that you went from being homeless to then running your own comedy night and creating this proof of concept show, which has led to conversations with TV production companies. That's quite an achievement.
Yeah, I say I'm happy. I'm just saying that because I'm talking to you. I never give myself credit for stuff like that. You know what I mean? I was talking to this girl last night and I said, you know what? She was saying, you should be proud of yourself. So I said, I never give myself credit for stuff like that. But I suppose if you look at my whole journey from, like you said, selling good times to, like, I went from selling good times, living the high life, being like, you know, I was mad in love, had this big extravagant wedding, traveled all around the world, came back, got divorced, was suicidal, homeless, started doing comedy, stand-up, open mic. Eventually, it led to... And then I was homeless again. And then it led to university, screenwriting, and like you said, the proof of concept, I might say, and speaking to production companies and, you know, just meeting great people. I think one of the best things as well, I've met... You know, we had a discussion about the people we grew up with as well.
Hmm.
I think as well, one of the great things about... I have this joke, I say I fucking hate this industry, but I mean, like, it's a joke, like, you know, it's not, it's much better than the old industry of the streets of Burnt Oak and Edgware, you know.
Yeah
so yeah, it's not, it's, it could be worse, and like I like the people now, like all my friends are cool, you know.
I think the thing as well is that it's the broad spectrum of people that you meet from all different walks of life.
Yeah that's it as well.
And the one thing you've got in common is your passion for comedy.
Yeah.
So outside of your comedy career, what do you do to unwind and relax?
I go to a cinema, definitely on a Sunday on my own. I go to the cinema on my own.
Do you? Every Sunday? Do you make that like a commitment to yourself? Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I go to cinema. Yeah. I said, you know what though? Sometimes I'll go to cinema more than once, but I mean... Occasionally, say like I've got a son, so say if I've got him on a Friday or Saturday,
I will
go and see something with him, but then I will always go on my own on a Sunday.
Great.
Yeah, the last thing I saw was The Last Night in Soho.
Oh, did you like that?
Yeah.
You got really a rights film. It. Yeah, I want to see that. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Heard good things.
I saw him the other night, but you know what it was? I was with people. And it was an appropriate time. It was in a private member's place. I just thought, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, always tricky. So, okay, so cinema, that's your way to unwind and relax. But then I guess it also is, I'm not saying it's work per se because you enjoy it, but I guess you've always got like that mindset where you're analysing everything, and the writer and filmmaker in you is always analysing.
Oh, I really, that one, I mean, have you seen it?
No, I want
to
see it.
That's a great one to analyze. You know, I really, cinematic as well, it's great. Was really, really, I enjoyed it. Do you know what? I've not enjoyed something that much in ages.
Okay.
Really good. And just what they did with Soho was amazing, because I'm down Soho quite a lot as well.
Yeah.
So I like it. I really like it, what they did.
Will you, I mean, maybe this applies more to sitcoms, et cetera. When you're watching stuff, do you actually make notes? You're analysing, or do you watch it first, like once through and enjoying it, and then will you watch back again and then be a bit more analytical?
You know what? It depends. When I'm gearing up to do something, like I think I told you last week, I was gearing up to do a horror feature, to outline a horror feature. Yeah. So I spent like the last 7 or 10 days before that watching, like you said, watching everything you could think of on horror, but maybe not all of it. Maybe I flick through it to like some famous parts that I know about, kills and stuff like that. And I guess I do kind of make notes, or sometimes I'll just make mental notes, but I do.
Yeah.
I do. And I did, when I was doing sitcoms, I was making notes. I watched one episode of probably everything,
you know.
I went through loads, you know, like loads. So I think you've got to do that though, haven't you?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a good way of doing it as well, because you can't watch every series of everything. So like watching an episode gives you a bit of a flavor.
Do you know what? I had a meeting with an agent, right? And I thought I'd covered everything, you know, because I knew he was going to ask me questions. And then he reeled off loads I hadn't seen, you know, like, and I felt at that point like I'd covered everything he could possibly get. He's probably going to ask me about or say that I hadn't. And he reeled off ones I hadn't seen. Like at that time there, I hadn't seen Inside Number 9.
Okay.
That was one of them. I can't remember.
There's loads I haven't seen. There's loads.
Yeah. I try and, like you said, just try and watch one episode of them.
Yeah, I think that's a good
strategy. There's just too many. There's loads.
There's so many. I know. And I mean, we've already touched upon this. The next question was going to be, are there any books that have particularly inspired you or had a big impact in you on your life? It doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, script related per se.
So like I said to you, for me, I felt it was a game changer when I read The Craft, the character. And what's the other book? Oh, yeah, Sid Field's book, The Definitive Guide to Screenwriting. Yeah, okay. I think them two. Oh, and you know what I've started reading as well? Because of your podcast, funny enough. I bought The Artist's Way. I've only read the first chapter.
Oh, great. Are you doing the journaling with it?
Yeah. It's just about the morning pages and stuff.
Yeah.
I've been doing it, but I've not been doing 3 pages.
Is a lot.
Yeah, I don't do 3 pages. I do like a page.
I reckon everyone does that.
I know it's just to keep repeating what you're saying and stuff, but I do a page and yeah. And the other thing I did as well, again, because of your podcast. So funny, I did it. Because I thought I'll quickly listen to it again, because I remember there was something at the end of his podcast, and it's this. So I put on the one, what is her name, the comedy writer? She's in
Christine Rose. Rose. Yeah.
And I put on that and I listened to that, and she's talking about the cold shower thing. And I thought, I haven't done that in ages. So before this podcast, right? I put on the cold shower, right? I was just standing there looking at it. I figured, I can't do this. So I turned it off and I put on this Whitney Houston song. I'm going to wait till the drop. You know, didn't we almost have it all? Didn't we almost? So I put it on and I put it in. I mean, I share a house with people where I've got an ensuite at the top. They must think, what the fuck was going on in there? I was screaming in that shower, mate. I tell you what, I haven't done the cold shower in ages, but I felt great.
They're a game changer.
Right. Yeah.
All right, well, I'll have to put on some Whitney next time. I thought you might go for something more like, I want to dance with somebody, you know, something a bit more of a beat, but you went with something more melodramatic. Okay. Oh, well, that's great. That's great. I'm glad you're doing that. And I guess then my final question for you, Ashley, is what does the idea of balance mean to you or not? And I say or not because you might not believe in it. You might be like, I'm all in.
I think, you know, like I said, the thing with balance, I think, you know, that thing I do, some people think it's strange that I'll go to the cinema. And they said to do this in The Artist's Way, spend time with your creative self. But this is before The Artist's Way.
Okay.
I think to have balance, I think it's great, especially if you're creative, to have that time on your own, away from everything. Or maybe, say if you're into comedy, maybe actually sometimes you need to get a break from comedy and not just watch it. But like cinema or something like that, or maybe even like a walk or a drive. these things, like, I come up with my best ideas when I'm on my own, like doing stuff like that, like driving.
Yeah, yeah.
Like walking, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that's what, because it's time alone. So you got to have your balance.
Great. That's a really good answer. And where can people keep up to date with what you're up to in terms of your socials?
I'm on social media. I hate it. I'm Ashley Gorman on Instagram. I heard you saying as well on that podcast, have you stuck to deleting the app off your phone?
No.
Instagram. Yeah. See,
obviously
I deleted
not.
It the other day. I said to my mate, I went off deleting the Instagram off my phone. It's fucking rubbish, mate. I just feel like I'm just watching people's lives. And then anyway, next thing you know, I must have posted out my story and I just get a WhatsApp. It's like, that lasted long. It's like 24 hours I was off there or something.
I know.
It's just a nightmare, especially if you're trying to write something.
Complete procrastination.
Yeah, you're just going on it and you just go on it. And it's like they're all built in a way to keep you on there. But yeah, I'm Ashley Gorman on Instagram. That's it, mate.
Okay. All right, mate. Well, look, really great chatting with you.
Yeah,
and, nice one, mate. Particularly good to reminisce over the old Edgware burnt oak days.
Oh, yeah, it was great, mate. Great, nice one. Perfect.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.